thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law.
'Cause I'm the tax man.
Call in now with your tax questions at 247-7282.
And welcome to Life and Taxes with Andrew Foster from Harvell and Collins. Good morning, Andrew. How are
you? Good morning, Ben. Doing well.
247-7282 if you'd like to call us there for that. All right. So what do you have for us today?
Well, Ben, today we have a case out of the First Circuit with both power of attorney issues as well as tax issues.
Oh, okay.
So it's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
So one of the things is that we talk a lot, Ben, on Let's Talk Legal as well as this show, Life and Taxes, about how important it is when you name your power of attorney to get someone who you really trust and to make sure that they're going to do right by you, because the power of attorney allows the person to basically, especially a general, very broad power of attorney, to step into the individual's shoes and do anything that person may do themselves, and including filing taxes.
Right.
So,
right.
And that's becomes front and center in this particular case that we have before us today. And then the other thing is that when you're named a power of attorney, it's a large responsibility. You know, not only are you going to be responsible for making sure that an individual's, you know, bills get paid, make sure you're doing right by them, you know, financially as with, you know, managing their assets, but you're also responsible for tax filings.
Right.
If that's in the power of attorney, that you have that power. And, you know,
and so a person might be incapacitated and
correct.
They couldn't do their own, right?
Correct. So. That's exactly right. So, you know, hypothetical is obviously the individual takes a turn either health-wise, accident-wise, can no longer manage their affairs. There's really two ways, Ben, under the law for someone to then go about managing an individual's financial affairs. One is if they've executed a durable power of attorney, the agent steps in and, you know, we'll take over that role. The second is if they don't have a durable power of attorney, you're looking at a guardianship action.
Right, right.
To be able to have court approval to manage the individual's affairs.
Declaration,
so those are really the
of
two
incompetency
ways.
And then naming a guardian.
Correct. Right. That's exactly right. And that's a court proceeding. So we try to avoid the court proceedings by having good, you know, broad, general, durable power of appointments. And that brings us to our case today. So Dad basically, in this particular case in 2005, executed a power of attorney, naming his son as the agent. Very common. You know, very common to name your son. And in this power of attorney was broad, and it had the authority to prepare, execute, and file Dad's tax returns. And to represent him before any proceeding with the
right.
IRS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dad was elderly. Dad needed help. So in 2006, son started, you know, taking some actions relative to the power of attorney and started, you know, recognizing that dad was being a little loose with his finances and needed to start marshaling, you know, assets together. However, in later on in 2006, dad and son had a little bit of a falling out. And dad says, son, you know, the power of attorney is that I gave you is revoked. Son says, that's fine. I don't want to do anything with it anyways. You know, I'm not taking any further action relative to the power of attorney.
Okay. Now, is that the proper way to revoke that?
There we go. There's a good question, Ben, and that's going to become front and center in this particular case.
Mm-hmm.
Dad does go as far as to execute a couple of documents revoking the power of attorney, but never does anything with them. He just keeps them in his drawer there at his desk. And son never really gives dad anything in writing relative to renouncing his, you know, right to act under the power of attorney.
Do you need both? I mean,
simply,
just one revoking it? Does that do the job?
Correct. One revoking or renouncing are going to be sufficient enough.
Right.
But again, you know, telling each other, you know.
Right. An oral one may not hold up. Right?
There you go. Okay. And then the son did also tell his dad's lawyer, accountant, and things like that, said, oh, by the way, I'm not acting anymore under dad's power of attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Well, flash forward a few years later, 2010, they kind of make up, you know, and son and father, you know, get back together. There's never really any use of the power of attorney per se relative to any actions, but they do make up. And then lo and behold, in 2013, dad ends up passing away. and son is named the executor of the estate. And so son goes back, and just like any good executor does, Ben, one of the first things we talk about when we get involved in the administration of estate is, oh, by the way, has your dad filed his tax returns?
Mm-hmm.
You're responsible for making sure at least the last, 3 years of returns get filed. You can be personally liable if you don't. And he looks back and he goes, lo and behold, dad hasn't filed a tax return since 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, what does he do? He gets together and he has the CPA prepare the returns for 2006 through 2012. And he files them all at one time. And lo and behold, there was a refund in 2006 for $140,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then he owed a little bit for the remaining years, but that amounted to less than $40,000. So you're looking at a refund of $100,000 plus all your liability being paid for the subsequent years.
Mm-hmm.
So they file it. And then, of course, what does the service say?
Hmm.
You're late. You're late filing. You have that 3-year window to claim that refund. You didn't exercise your rights. You didn't file your return within those 3 years. So what ends up happening is, we mentioned this before, what does the refund do, Ben? It mm-hmm. goes poof.
Yes.
It's gone.
Right.
And you just made a contribution to the federal coffers.
Yes.
And so he goes, son goes, well, wait a minute. My dad, really was not able to manage his financial affairs.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, he shouldn't be responsible for this 3-year statute of limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, right there in the Internal Revenue Code, it says that.
Mm-hmm.
It says that, one of the exceptions to this 3-year refund rule is if you're under some type of, mental incompetence, disability, and in all honesty, Ben, the service never argued in the case that dad had the capacity to actually file these returns.
Okay.
What they did was they said, oh, well, that's true. There is this exception to the rule. But
however,
if there's a power of attorney that's been named and has the ability to file the returns, that is what we'll call the exception to the exception to the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Because, yes, we understand dad was under this mental disability and was unable to make his filings. But you, son, were named in the power of attorney. And you, son, had the, responsibility, had the authority at least, mm-hmm. to file the returns. And you failed to do that. Well, son's response, of course, is number one, I renounced it.
Yes.
And, oh, dad revoked it. And here's some papers showing dad revoked it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they never went anywhere, but he revoked it.
Where do they have to go?
Exactly. They need to be given to the agent. North Carolina, there's several different ways. One would be if it's a recorded power of attorney, you need to record a revocation
right.
over at the Register of Deeds. This is under Pennsylvania law. The revocation needed to be given to the agent and never delivered. So the revocation is invalid. Dad's revocation.
Well,
the renunciation mm-hmm. that son made orally, no good.
Okay.
Has to be in writing. So therefore, the power of attorney was valid.
Mm-hmm.
Son goes, well, okay, so the power of attorney's valid, court. You got me there. But what about this fact that I didn't know? Well, number one, I didn't have a duty to file my dad's return. It just said I was authorized to file my dad's return.
Oh,
it didn't
say
I have a duty to file the return. And also he said, and I didn't know that my dad wasn't filing his returns. I thought he was filing them.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't on actual knowledge, that I needed to actually file mm-hmm. these returns. Guess what the court said? Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Does not matter. You, as the power of attorney, have the authority to file the returns. Therefore, if you needed to file them and you're the agent, you got to do it.
Okay.
And that's literally what the court said in this particular matter, Ben. And that was the analysis they gave. Number one, the revocation, the renunciation were invalid. Power of attorney was in effect. Number two, you were authorized to file your dad's returns. You failed to do it. Guess what happened to the refund?
Mm-hmm.
It went poof. The statute of limitations held up.
The refund I can understand a little bit more, but I wonder about the giving. Did he know about his dad executing that at the time?
Did he know about his dad executing
the revocation?
No.
He didn't know it at the time.
No. They found it later in his papers when he died.
I was going to say, if he knew it, I mean, if he showed it to him and said, here it is, and I'm going to put it in here.
I think it's one of those things, Ben, I can read between the tea leaves here a little bit. And it was just more and more of those things. When you're having a falling out, Mm-hmm. Well, you're not my power of attorney anymore. Well, I don't want to be your power of attorney anyways.
Right,
you know,
right.
One of those kind of things.
Right, exactly.
But legally speaking, they didn't do the proper channels to make the revocation nor the renunciation legally valid. So this is a real interesting case, Ben, and I think it really shows here again. You know,
yeah. I tell you, one thing though is he told his dad's attorney that he was revoking or renouncing the power of attorney. The attorney should have stepped up at that point.
Guess what they did? Uh-huh. The attorney did prepare another power of attorney for dad to sign. Mm-hmm. Dad wouldn't sign it. So it's real interesting. I mean, there's a lot of facts in this one. I kind of gave the short version,
right?
But the fact is, in the main takeaway point that I wanted our listeners to hear is that, you know, once you're that power of attorney. You know, did he have a duty to file?
You have a duty.
It almost is a duty. That's exactly right. It's almost a duty because you have a fiduciary duty. That's correct. But do you have a duty to file the tax returns? If they don't do it, you darn well do.
Yeah.
If you have a refund, because you're not going to be able to get around that statute of limitations refund issue because, again, you had the power to file it during that 3-year period and you failed to do it. You're not going to be able to file late and claim a refund.
Now, in North Carolina, a durable power of attorney can be filed at the Register of Deeds office.
Yes.
That's right. But it doesn't have to be?
No, it doesn't have to be under the new law. Mm-hmm. Before, in North Carolina, for it to be durable, meaning that it would exist, mm-hmm. you know, when a person's incapacitated, it needed to be recorded. Under the new power of attorney statute that passed in 2018, it doesn't have to be.
All right.
But I'll tell you this much. You better record it still because of the way that the law is.
Okay. And again, if you want to find out more about your own tax situation, you want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins, you can email Andrew A. Foster at harvellandcollins.com. And you can drop by them and see them on Bridges Street in Moorhead City and get your taxes straightened out, too, because life and taxes goes on. And we'll have more next week. Coming up next, Congressman Greg Murphy.